Lesson number 13 in our course on Ericksonian hypnotherapy, and I'm Dr. Richard Nomgard with SubliminalScience.com. And since we're nearing the end of this course, I encourage you to check out our website at SubliminalScience.com for a very similar course that we have structured like this on the subject of contextual hypnotherapy. And those of you who have enjoyed this course will certainly find that course on contextual hypnotherapy to be quite interesting as we really look at sort of the evolution of what's happened in hypnotherapy since Milton Erickson made his contributions and how these two approaches or modalities of hypnosis can be utilized together. I've always been a big fan of Bill O'Hanlon's work, and the reason why is because of his ability to integrate solution-focused therapy into hypnotherapy. And much of our work in the contextual hypnotherapy course focuses on the solution-oriented approaches, ACT therapy approaches, cognitive behavioral approaches, as well as mindfulness-based stress reduction approaches. So you can find information about that at, of course, SubliminalScience.com. In lesson 13, I'm going to talk about two things that are perhaps reasons that you chose to participate in this course. The first being anchoring, and the second being covert hypnosis. Now, the idea of anchoring and the descriptor of anchoring was not Milton Erickson's description. However, the concepts of anchoring that I'm going to teach you in this course really came from Milton Erickson's recognition of the power of the audio, auditory, the visual, and the kinesthetic learning process and our ability to create subconscious associations. It was actually Richard Bandler, the co-founder of neuro-linguistic programming, who modeled Milton Erickson. And the word anchoring is a word that is associated with NLP, but came from his study of the methods of Milton Erickson. And when we talk about anchoring, I always like to begin by talking about Russian psychologist Pavlov and his dogs. This is really an important story. And of course, Pavlov is the Russian researcher that everyone knows for having dogs. And what Pavlov did, of course, was he rang the dinner bell every time he fed them. This is behavioral operant conditioning, and created an association with the dinner bell and meat. And of course, Pavlov removed the meat and only rang the dinner bell. And when the dogs were checked, what happened? They produced an automatic response. They salivated. Now that's really pretty important. There's no meat, just the sound of a bell. But the sound of a bell produced a very basic biological response in the dog. What this actually shows us is that not only can the subconscious mind, but the unconscious mind can be altered or changed or impacted by the methods of association. And that's really what anchoring is all about. Anchoring is a process where memory recall, state change, or even an idea or a feeling is associated intentionally with some stimuli. Now, it can be associated unintentionally. Every anchor or the concept of anchoring occurs in regular life as well as it does hypnosis as well. But for our purposes, we're talking about state change, memory recall, or an idea or a feeling that is intentionally associated with some stimuli. Some examples of this occurring in real life, you ever been driving down the road and a song comes on? And maybe it's a song you haven't heard in 5 or 10 or 15 or even 20 years. And as soon as that song comes on, instantly it produces a feeling, maybe a sense of happiness or joy from a different time. Or maybe a feeling of sadness associated with a different time. Maybe it even produces a response, the same response every time you hear that song. I'm not going to sing for you because I'm the worst singer, which, by the way, always distressed me. I love to sing, but I'm kind of a monotone. And so that was always distressing to me that I couldn't sing, that I'm a lousy singer. Nobody ever needs a monotone in their band. I guess many years, you know, as a teenager, it kind of distressed me because I wished that I could sing. But then I found that I had the perfect hypnotic voice. And so then I've been able to sing through, I guess, my hypnosis, cadence, rhythm, and words. So whenever we find ourselves disappointed in some aspect of our life, look at how that aspect of our life can be used in a beneficial way. But most of you have heard that song, Baby Don't Hurt Me. See, I can't sing it all. Baby Don't Hurt Me. Look, as soon as that song comes on, an anchor has been set, and I start bobbing my head to the left, just like the Jim Carrey skit on that TV show in Living Color a decade or two ago. Hypnotherapists will certainly recognize anchoring as a post-hypnotic idea in stage hypnosis. John Sorbonne has used the color red to create an association, both as a bit in his stage hypnosis work, but also in clinical hypnosis as a proof. I often ask my clients how long the hypnosis session felt. I use time distortion as a proof in hypnosis. I also sometimes use John Sorbonne's method. I'm usually drinking a large iced tea. Some of you have seen my big Quick Trip cup filled with unsweetened iced tea. I live in the South, and it has a red lid on it and a red straw. Well, John Sorbonne, of course, carries around red pens wherever he goes. He even has his name on the side of him, and his contact info has sort of become his trademark. But what John does is he says to a client as a post-hypnotic suggestion, and for some reason when you see the color red, it'll be brighter, sharper, crisper, clearer. It'll stand out wherever you go. Somebody's tie, a shirt, a cup, a stop sign, a taillight. Whenever you see the color red, it'll bring a smile to your face, maybe even some laughter. And it will bring you back to this state that you've created here today of power, of confidence, and of success. And so this post-hypnotic suggestion is given. He ties, essentially, the anchor here is the state or the resource in the hypnosis session to the client seeing the color red in their environment over the next couple of days. What this does is this subconsciously reinforces all of the work that was done in the hypnosis session. And what John Sorbonne does, what I do sometimes, is even prove to our client that this anchor has been set. By expanding on that post-hypnotic suggestion, even saying to them before the awakening process is done. And when you see the red cup here in my office, I'm going to show it to you. And for some inexplicable reason, it's not only going to bring a smile to your face, but it's actually going to bring laughter. You're going to look at that cup and you're going to try not to laugh. But the more you try not to laugh, the funnier it gets. The more you try not to laugh, the more you're going to laugh. Notice that Ericksonian pattern there. And now, open your eyes, 1, 2, 3, wide awake. I usually just reach over, grab my iced tea cup, and take a sip of my iced tea. As soon as I do that, they see that big red cup, and they begin to have a smile on their face. I'll say to them, oh, the cup brought a smile to your face, didn't it? And then they'll even begin to start laughing, acting on that suggestion. And as soon as they start laughing at that red cup, even if it's just a little bit of a laughter, a chuckle, but many of my clients go into a deep belly laugh, at that suggestion, they realize at that very moment that hypnosis has in fact helped them make a significant change. Anchors can be subconsciously programmed through repetition and repetitious suggestion. They can be created intentionally, and anchors can be, by the way, positive or negative. Of course, in this course, we're teaching ethical hypnosis, so we're keeping our anchors positive. But anchors are set in politics all of the time. They're set in seduction and love all of the time. They're set in sales and manipulation all of the time. If I say to my wife, every time I love you, and touch her in some way, a tap on the shoulder, a touch of the back of the hand, or even just putting my hand up against her face. And every time I say I love you, I do that. Next time I don't say I love you, but simply touch her, the anchor will be fired and produce that response to my love. If I'm a shopkeeper and every time a kid comes in my store, I give him a balloon animal. Okay, let's say I know how to make balloon animals. I actually do. It's actually how I paid for college. He's going to associate that anchor has been set. Every time he makes a purchase, I give him a balloon animal. So now when I give him a balloon animal, he's going to make the purchase. it's an example of an anchor that could be set in a sales type setting or situation. A politician might give away freebies every time they give a speech. Now everybody wants a speech. Why? So they actually get more freebies. In therapy, anchors are sometimes called triggers. These are what we associate with our clients' non-therapeutic anchors that they've set through repetition or through prior learning. For example, every time I'm angry, I drink a beer. For our alcoholic clients. For our cigarette smoking clients, every time I get in my car, I light a cigarette. So the trigger is really not a trigger, it's really an anchor. You know, I hear people talking about the way that they do smoking cessation hypnosis, and they say, I look for the triggers. What they're really looking for are what anchors our clients have set simply through the course of life. Post-traumatic stress disorder. As a therapist, I do a lot of treatment for post-traumatic stress disorder, and it is, in fact, almost always an anchor-based phenomena. The client has either had a visual, an auditory, or a kinesthetic experience, which has, according to the diagnostic criteria, done two things. One, it has either put them in imminent harm's way or the perceived likelihood of imminent harm. And two, it's produced a negative response that that is overwhelming and something that they find difficult and that they no longer wish to experience. That response set that is so distressing to them then comes about anytime there's an auditory, a visual, or a kinesthetic experience that they associate with that first experience. And so this is recalled subconsciously whenever they're in various places or with various people, which of course causes them distress. This is actually an example of an emotional response, or even with our more catastrophically difficult clients, revivification based on the kinesthetic, auditory, or visual cues that they have associated with a particular response set. Anchors are used in religion, an altar call at a Baptist church, for example, in politics, when you see that politician pointing in towards themselves, in like I said, romance or in sales, it can anchor an idea to the speaker. Watch Tony Robbins speak and watch his hands. And every time he has a new idea, his hands go inward towards himself as if he's really giving the group a big hug and bringing that idea towards himself. What he's doing here is he's anchoring a state of happiness, a new promise to himself as the speaker. Anchors can elicit extremely strong responses to stimuli. They can lead in a particular direction, and they very often lead to very specific actions. Anchors can be set really in a number of different ways. They can be set non-verbally. They can be set with hand motions, music, a variety of nonverbal cues, voice intonation. They can also be set to specific cues in hypnosis. I do this all the time. I mean, very frequently. I will create a cue for my client to respond to. Many other hypnotists use the same technique of just touching that thumb and index finger together, kind of making an A-OK sign and associating a state with that specific cue. An anchor can be set via repetition. This is what positive affirmations are all about. This is what rote prayers are all about. Anchors can be set, certainly intentionally, with my clients all the time. I teach them to set and to fire anchors. And I'm going to share those techniques with you here in just a minute. They can also be set covertly without ever telling my client what it is that I'm doing. It can be set through sound, it can be set through touch, it can be set through direct suggestion. The basic principle with anchoring, though, is the more that it's practiced, the stronger the association or the stronger that anchor becomes. The stronger an anchor becomes, of course, the stronger the response set. This is what we see in our PTSD clients, that the response is extremely strong because they've literally practiced that anchor in their subconscious mind over and over and over. You can also use anchors in your own life to make your life as a hypnotist a little bit better. And then you can share this technique with your clients. I teach my clients how to do self-hypnosis in almost all of the sessions that I do. Here's a process for setting a self-anchor. And I'll take you through this process. First, identify a positive state or a resource state that you'd like to feel. I mean, as you're listening to this MP3, what would you like to feel? Would you like to feel confidence, joy, amazement? Would you like to feel intelligence? Would you like to feel the capacity to retain information? What is it that you want to feel? Now identify a trigger and a cue that you would like to use when you want to feel that state. For simplicity, I'm going to give it to you. Simply touch that right thumb and right index finger together. I guess if you're left-handed, you can use your left thumb and your left index finger. But make kind of an A-OK sign with the right hand. Okay? That's the trigger or the cue that we're going to use. Now, you don't have to go into deep hypnosis quickly here. Rather, just concentrate and relax for a moment. Set any stress about yesterday aside. If you notice your thoughts about tomorrow being followed, simply bring your attention back to the breath. You can even leave the eyes open for this. But just concentrate for a moment and enjoy a minute of clarity, a moment of relaxation. Now, one of the things that's amazing about us is that we're really not dependent on somebody or something outside of us to elicit a state. In other words, happiness is actually generated from the inside. I always hear things, oh, that makes me so happy, or he makes me so happy, or she makes me so happy. It's actually us who is responding to him or her or that that produces happiness. And so right now, as you deeply relax, elicit that state that you identified that would be so helpful to you. For example, if it was confidence that you decided you wanted to experience, be confident. Choose right now to be confident. If it's happiness that you wanted to experience, choose to be happy. There's an old saying I learned from someone in Kansas years ago. Anytime you're upset, always remember you have the same pants to get glad in that you have to be mad in. We can elicit any state we'd like to really at any time. Now magnify that state. Increase that state. Increase that joy, that happiness, that confidence, whatever it was that you wanted to experience. Move it from an awareness to a state that you're currently experiencing. And as you currently experience that, step 6, move it to the highest level possible. Become, right now, where you are listening to this MP3, as confident or as joyful or as intelligent or whatever it is that you'd like to be, really at a level 8 or 9 or even a 10. Be that right now. Breathe in a breath, breathe in confidence. Breathe in a breath, breathe in joy. And recognize that you've created that state. Remember the A-OK sign? Touch that thumb, that index finger together. Touch it together. Press it together. And as you press it together, be confident. Be joyful. Be intelligent. Be whatever resource state it is that you picked. Now, let go of the thumb and the index finger. Let go of it for a minute. Just let your hand relax. Take in a deep breath. Breathe out. What you're really doing here is sort of breaking the state, reorienting. Let's go through that again. You've already identified a positive state. Identify the trigger and cue you want to use, in this case the A-OK sign. Concentrate for a moment and elicit that state. Become aware of that state. Magnify it. And then bring it to its highest level. Be confident, be joyful, be intelligent. bring it to a level 7, an 8, a 9, a 10. Fire that anchor again. Touch that thumb and index finger together. Perfect. Now release it. Just let go of the tension between the thumb and the index finger. Let your hand relax. And now again. Now again. Elicit that state. Step into that state. Be that state. Increase the quantity of that state. Bring it to a level 8 or 9 or 10. Fire that anchor again. Touch that thumb and index finger together. Feel that state that you've created and let go. Absolutely fantastic. Now, break the state, take in a breath, sort of have a mental saltine, if you will, for a moment. Here's what I'd like you to do. I'd like you to, if you're sitting down, just stand up for a minute right where you are. There's a mental saltine. Sit back down for a minute. I would tell you a joke if I knew one, but I don't know any jokes. And now, touch that thumb and that index finger together. Just do it right here, right now. Touch that thumb and index finger together. Press it together as tightly and as hard as you can. And notice when you do that. Notice when you do that what you're feeling. What is your state? Your state automatically is confidence. It's joy. It's intelligence. Now, here's the cool thing about this. Let's say you were a client who came to me because you lack confidence in public speaking situations. You can simply touch that thumb and that index finger together as you stepped up to the podium. Let's say you're a student who came to me because you feared your performance on test taking. When you step into that exam room and set your books to the floor, touch that thumb and that index finger together before you begin that first question and enter that resource state of intelligence or recollection. Let's say you want to feel joy. You're with your partner, and for some reason they want to watch a really sad movie, you know, Ordinary People or something like that. If you find yourself following those feelings which are unpleasant to you, simply take in a breath, touch that thumb and that index finger together, and bring yourself instantly back to this state that you've created right here, listening to this MP3. This is a technique that you can use to improve your own life, but this is also a great technique to teach your clients. I teach this to most of the clients who come into my office. Here are some common uses for a therapeutic anchor, or common ways to do it. Of course, touching that finger together, stress management, smoking cessation, confidence, post-hypnotic suggestion, like I mentioned, the color red, that idea from John Cerbone. Another common use for a therapeutic anchor is to replace negative associations, and here's a simple process to do that. When you have a client who has a cue, a trigger, an anchor, identify what it is. Then identify the automatic behavior or feeling that's produced whenever your client encounters that. Help them to create a new anchor or a new response. Then, in practice, in your office, elicit the cue, but set the replacement anchor. Repeat this 3 times. Repetition is what sets an anchor into the subconscious mind, and then test it to find out if the response is different. You can use a therapeutic anchor to create positive feelings. That's what I use them for most of all. You can also use them to simply enter trance. My clients know that when we move from my desk at the beginning of the session to the hypnotic furniture, I've really set an anchor in this process. So that when they come in, the very first session, we have the pre-talk at my desk, but then we move, when we're ready, to the hypnotic furniture. I say to them, you can pick either chair, they're both hypnotic. Now what I've done is I've set an anchor to the belief that this is where a person experiences hypnosis. So every time they come in my office and we spend a few moments chit-chatting at the desk in the front of the office, but move to the hypnotic furniture, as soon as they sit in a chair, they go deeply into trance. Let's talk now about covert hypnosis. By the way, there is a complete 3-hour course at subliminalscience.com focusing just on anchoring techniques with your clients. I wanted you to see in this course that the techniques really come from the ideas of Milton Erickson in his book, Hypnotic Alliterations of Sensory, Perceptual, and Psychophysical Processes. As well as some of his other work, with clients. But there is much that has been added to our body of knowledge since Milton Erickson's time. And that course on subliminalscience.com is actually a video course. It's 3 hours long, focusing specifically on methods of creating and retraining clients in setting hypnotic anchors. What is covert hypnosis? Well, I think covert hypnosis is something that is often misunderstood. Conversational or covert hypnosis. And in the world of hypnosis, there really are a lot of semantics. People think hypnosis is this, or hypnosis is this, or meditation is this, and meditation is that. There are people like me who say meditation and hypnosis are the same thing, and there are other people who say it's two heads of the same coin, and other people who says it's completely different. The reality is a lot of these are really just semantic games, in many cases put together by marketing people. Covert hypnosis sounds so much more appealing than learning how to use hypnosis in your daily conversations with people, because it's an efficient and effective way to communicate. The basic tenets of covert hypnosis are recognizing that all people are always in trance all of the time. It is about knowing how to direct people who are in trance to identify their deepest needs, or to develop a strategy for attaining something, or to take action towards reaching a goal. Covert hypnosis is really just about knowing how to use language to produce responses. That's what lessons 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6 in this series were really all about, the language patterns of the Milton model. Covert hypnosis is about knowing how to create emotional responses congruent with desired outcomes. Anchoring helps us to accomplish that. Covert hypnosis is really about knowing most what it is that the client wants to know. Covert hypnosis is about knowing the most effective ways to communicate with people, to cause them to look inside of themselves rather than outside of themselves for an answer. Covert hypnosis is about helping people without calling hypnosis hypnosis. Let me give you a couple examples of covert hypnosis, or what really is persuasion. A car salesman might say this. Perhaps you're out looking for a car. You go for a demo ride in that car, and now on the way back to the car lot, the salesman says, "Imagine driving this new Pinto to work in the morning." Or something like, "Don't you just love that new car smell?" He's anchored you to that 1974 Ford Pinto. You now want it. And so then he asks you that closing question, "If I could get the numbers correct today, Would you like to take it home and drive it to work in the morning?" "Of course I would, if you could get the numbers correct today." In dating, the guy, instead of using a pickup line, he says to a lady who he meets, or another guy who he meets, "You have a remarkable energy about you. Do you practice yoga or some other kind of spiritual discipline?" I think that's actually a line that Ross Jeffries taught in his trainings, and it really is a very effective way to communicate with people, much better than a typical line. You know, the typical line in dating, "Hey, does your arm hurt?" "No, why would my arm hurt?" "I figured you would have hurt it when you fell out of heaven." You know, that'll probably get a chuckle or maybe a snarky smile. But saying to somebody, because it focuses them back on themselves, "You have remarkable energy about you. Do you practice yoga or some kind of spiritual discipline?" You've now entered into a conversation. You have directed and focused their attention. A parent can use covert hypnosis. This is a true Milton Erickson technique. "Tonight for dinner, would you like to have broccoli or would you like to have carrots?" It's a faked alternative. Either way, the kids are still getting vegetables. A coach might use this technique by saying, "I'm going to teach you a strategy for increasing creativity. Close your eyes for a minute, relax. You can listen to each word, or you can let your mind drift and only listen with that subconscious mind, that mind you use when you're in the zone." What the coach has just done is actually a formal trance induction without ever calling it hypnosis, and now can make any kind of suggestion he'd like. Indirect, parable, direct suggestion, whatever. Any person in conversation with another person who seeks to gain agreement to their ideas. Think minister. Think hypnotist. Think friend. Anybody who wants somebody else to agree with their ideas could use a sentence structured like this. You know, many people enjoy learning about covert hypnosis. What are some of the methods of covert hypnosis? Well, probably the most well-known technique is a pattern interrupt, followed by a redirecting trance. A pattern interrupt really is anything that breaks our concentration and brings us into a new state of awareness. That's all it is. It can be an interruption from a kid while we're busy working. It can be during a movie that we're watching where there's dramatic silence and then suddenly something scary happens. Just anything that redirects our current trance into a new state of awareness. And this is what the quote-unquote world-famous Milton Erickson handshake was all about. Milton Erickson, we all have a standard ritual. We shake hands with somebody. Milton Erickson would shake their hand and immediately extend their hand up towards their face. That's not something they expected to have happen. And as soon as they do that, he would begin redirecting their attention to whatever it is that was important to him. Richard Bandler, of course, perfected this in his demonstrations. And now if you just go to YouTube and type in handshake induction, you're going to get a zillion YouTube videos showing how effective a pattern interrupt during a simple handshake can truly be. Why during the handshake? Because this is where we least expect something different to happen. We know what the process is usually going to entail. Covert hypnosis evokes emotional states and attachments. Covert hypnosis uses the language patterns of Milton Erickson. Covert hypnosis uses being an authority as a basis for giving direct suggestion. All these talking heads on TV during political shows, Fox News, MSNBC, CNN, BBC, Al Jazeera, these people aren't any smarter than you or me or anyone else. They don't know anything more about the situations than you know or I know. But they have authority because they're on TV, or they have authority because they are a professor at a university, have a PhD, or they're an authority because they wrote a book. By the way, if you want to be an authority, write a book. You can self-publish it. You can sell it on Amazon. But once you've written a book, people think you're a lot cooler than you really are. That's what happened to me. Covert hypnosis uses ambiguous language. This, of course, promotes agreement. And it also uses social power of the group, recognizing that people don't like to stand out from the group, but they do like to have leadership within the group. Covert hypnosis is about building rapport, negating feelings of isolation. So many people, I think, especially in the era of social media, have a feeling of isolation and a feeling of not really connecting to people. And being in rapport with somebody, even the basic principles of matching and mirroring, using the same type of nonverbal communication with our hands or arms or breath that our clients use or that somebody else uses, builds rapport. And it communicates to somebody on a very personal level, this person is interested in me. Covert hypnosis, healthy covert hypnosis, is about partnering with people. Anytime you partner with somebody, whoever has the most flexibility is the person, by the way, who has the most power. And covert hypnosis is about recognizing the internal strengths of a person. People love to be flattered. I had a situation with an organization I worked with this week where I did something that benefited the organization and the people. But of course, those who had been sitting on the sidelines, taking no action for a long period of time, responded to the action I took with a barrage of different criticism. So I let the head of the organization know my displeasure, and the email I got back was, by the way, he's never taken a hypnosis course, but was pure covert hypnosis. The email basically said, Richard, your leadership skills are incredible, and most people wish that they could accomplish the many things that you're able to accomplish, blah, 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 blah. Even though I was unhappy about the situation, I smiled when I read the email. My state changed instantly. These are the tenets that covert hypnosis is built upon. Covert hypnosis is not magical. It's not mystical. It is simply the process of effective communication. Now, I'm going to take about 2 more minutes, and I want to discuss covert hypnosis as it's often sold on the internet. You know, learn how to shop at a store without paying your bill. Learn how to get free drinks from strangers. Learn how to, buy our covert hypnosis course, and, you'll be the funniest guy in the room always. Take our covert hypnosis course, and, bank tellers will give you free money. What we're really talking about here is basic manipulation, and I always find it humorous that hypnotists are so good at marketing that they've actually figured out how to use the word hypnosis plus a superlative modifier, covert hypnosis, to make the simple teaching of either effective communication if it's healthy or manipulation if it's destructive into something special. Scams are actually accomplished every day by scammers all over the world without it ever being called hypnosis. The real magic of any of these scams is not in the operator learning hypnosis, but in selecting the right patsy. Nigerians who are part of the 419 scam do it every day. The gypsy, Roma gypsy, have been doing it for centuries. LBJ's henchmen did it with Lee Harvey Oswald. The Sembilese Liberation Army got lucky with Patty Hearst, and history is filled with those kind of stories. But when we give it a fancy name, covert or secret operative hypnosis, for some reason people are compelled to spend $47 on an internet digital download to learn what really are not so secret techniques for effective communication.